Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Ethics Talk. My name is Nicholas Brousseau, and I am joined by the wonderful human being, Michael Klagstad. Why don't you say hello, Michael?
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Yes. It is a cold and rainy day here in Mount Pleasant, so it's a perfect day to lounge around and engage in some dialogue. I hope your environment is as conducive as mine is to staying in and, you know, enjoying the conversation. That said, we hope your voice is present tonight, and our number to call in is 1-646-727-3928. And provided that you do call in, we usually like to finish our thoughts before picking up our caller's calls. And so just stay on the line, and we will definitely try to get to you. In any case, tonight, we'll start by identifying three really complicated concepts. The three concepts are culture, ideology, and identity. Given the difficulty level of these concepts, we're not planning to come up with some sort of definition that's going to be all-encompassing to that semantic object or word. But rather, we're just trying to come up with an agreed meaning for the word to serve as a stepping stone for the conversation. So often in conversations, people move too quickly and are actually talking about two very different things, even though they're using the same word. So just as a note, you know, if you're having your conversations, make sure you're talking about the same things when you're communicating amongst each other. After we set these stepping stones in place, as I'm calling them, we'll try to identify, if any, the relations that exist amongst these concepts. And in order to understand this, one of the ways we'll explore this relationship is through a Marxist view of superstructure and base. Actually, I should say base and superstructure, because the base determines the superstructure. And what the base is the economic reality that the civilization or society finds itself in. So here in the United States, arguably our economic reality is capitalism, or perhaps crony capitalism. And then the superstructure is the society's ideas or ideals. So the values and norms and the art and literature that imply those norms, the materials that imply those norms. So the base, the economic reality, determines the ideas that are being cycled through, and they kind of perpetuate each other. But it starts with this base. And then finally, the last and perhaps most intriguing question that will kind of be danced around throughout the conversation will be, what does this say about our nature as humans? Are we autonomous? We have free will. Or are we automatons? Are we determined by our environment so much so that we really don't have free will? Or perhaps there's some sort of synthesis that can be made about human nature. Maybe part of it is free will and part of it is determined by our environment. So the kind of nature versus nurture questions coming to play already. So to start, Mike, how would you unpack the complicated concept of culture? What do you think culture is? And we'll kind of build on, I'll kind of ask you some questions as we start to identify it.
Well, I'd be happy to play the question game, but just as sort of a general disclaimer, I know nothing about Marxist theory. So for any listeners out there, this is going to be strictly my opinion. You know, I think it's really easy to take the word culture literally and think of things like theater, you know, or plays or some kind of opera. When I think of culture, I sort of think of like the unique and identifying characteristics. I mean, what separates our social group as a people? You know, it could be anything like ethnic foods or, you know, Mardi Gras for Louisiana and the French crowd. Think about things like cultural norms, you know, those sorts of things. I guess what makes us unique as a society is what I think of as culture.
Okay, what makes us unique compared to each other's society? So there's several societies within the world, the Earth, and so the differences between these societies is what determines our culture.
Well, I don't want to say unique per se, because it sort of puts a connotation of difference on the whole thing, like a spin that we're only the only thing that is culture is what separates us. You know, we may share common culture. It might be certainly the case that, you know, American culture is comparable to Australian culture, for example, in specific ways. Or I'm not even sure what the correct adjective is there. Aussie, I don't know. I don't think it needs to be differences necessarily, but, you know, I think as humans we draw distinctions better than we draw comparisons. I think we definitely identify by distinction. So I might say, for example, as American as a cheeseburger, you know, I might be wrong in drawing a distinction like that, but I might say that the ethnic foods of America are like fast food or pizza or cheeseburgers, and I might be wrong on all those, but I think you see where I'm going with that. Or we might say that, you know, the Orient has a culture of Oriental food.
Okay. I actually want to take a step back to one of the first things you said about taking cultural literally, and you kind of listed off theater and literature and things like that. And if I think about the word culture literally, or perhaps like, you know, its etymology, which I haven't done a lot of research on, but I imagine it goes back to something agricultural, that being, you know, we raise crops, you know, to culture them and then to take the fruits of them and ingest them. And so, is there any way that we can kind of look at culture that way and understand, perhaps, how we get from culture as an agricultural concept to culture as a societal human, concept?
It's interesting that we keep coming back to food, so maybe there's something to that. I don't know anything about the etymology of the word either. But I don't think it'd be difficult to say that they both have a feeling of nurturing about them, you know, whether we're nurturing food or we're nurturing people through society. I don't know. Maybe that's it.
And so, what do
Hopefully.
you think would be nurtured by the culture? What do you
Well,
think it is specific in humans that would be nurturing culture? Because you could say perhaps in corn, it's, you know, you get a good harvest, you know, so
Right.
you get the quantity and the quality of the food. And I guess you could say that about the human, because I guess I don't really know much about agriculture, so I don't know what you would need to make good corn. But I guess I don't really know what you would need to make a good human, or at least I could think about it and come up with some things, but I don't really know. I don't know. Do you have anything to say about that?
Maybe. You know, I could give you some song and dance about evolutionary biology and tell you a story about how society cultures us to make us successful at reproduction. But, you know, I think a more straightforward answer is just that, you know, society gives us our ethics, you know, our norms, the sort of subjective evaluations of things. I don't know if that's where you're going with it, but I think that that's, I think a parallel that many people would draw. Society is sort of a instills norms in us.
Yeah, and so culture needs to operate within a society. I mean, we keep using the word society to talk about where culture takes place. I mean, is that, are we moving too fast there, or does culture only happen within, or at least the culture that we're identifying, the human culture, that only exists within society then?
I would say yes. I mean, I would be comfortable jumping on that bandwagon.
I would too, because I was thinking, you know, imagine like a feral child, you know, like or a feral child being somebody who was, you know, raised by wolves, I guess you could say.
Right. I think you'd want to call them uncultured.
Yeah, good. That's a good way of clearing that up, Mike. Well, we got a caller already, so let's take that and see what our caller's all about.
All right.
Hello, caller?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, guys.
Hey, how
How
are
you
you doing? You mind telling us your name and maybe where you're calling from?
My name is Radia, and I'm
Oh, hello,
calling
Rhea. Yeah.
from New York City.
Very cool. Is it raining over there like it is in Michigan?
No, but let me tell you, the weather has been a little cold and crazy, and the wind has been blowing like a typhoon. It's craziness, and my allergies have been killing me. So I guess it's just as bad as where you are.
Yeah, it's brutal here, I tell you. I do landscaping, so I was out playing in the rain all day, and I was not having fun.
Oh, nice.
But in any case, we're trying to identify exactly what culture is, and I don't know. I think so far we've determined that culture is something that operates within a society, and that we draw distinctions about, or we identify our culture by comparing our culture to others' cultures. And so we kind of identify what our culture is by its differences rather than its similarities. And I'm not sure how well I am on that school of thought, but that's where we're at right now. Do you have anything that you would like to say about culture, or do you want to just listen a little more?
Well, I was going to say that culture, to me, is a full range of human behaviors, behavior patterns for the survival of the particular community in which you live. You can look at culture from an aspect of a universal culture, you know, universal cultural habits that people have, and then subcultures, meaning different ethnic groups, per se. But I see culture as certain behavioral patterns or artifacts that have been created by that particular group to induce their survival, to keep their particular structure intact, if I can say that. So that's how I view culture.
All right, so you're talking about this survival of a particular structure. So it doesn't sound like you're speaking about the survival of the self or the physical body, but of some sort of structure. And I don't know, that seems really vague in my mind. Do you mind kind of expanding on that?
Well, when I say survival, I mean the survival of ideology. Because ideology are shared beliefs that are agreed upon with a group. So in order for these ideologies to be held in that particular structure, a culture has to be created. Particular behavioral patterns have to be put in place in order for that particular group to survive, such as media artifacts, literature, a way of thinking, a way of life. So that's what I mean when I say survival. A culture survives because individuals repeat it on a perpetual, they keep perpetuating the idea, the shared beliefs of that particular culture, therefore handing it down from generation to generation. So that's what I mean by survival. Without that particular structure of culture and then ideology, nothing would be able to survive. Without you being able to have individuals have a shared belief to where you can hand down that particular piece of culture, what you guys are talking about, food, whether it be food or literature or things of this nature, and handing it down so it perpetuates and it continually stays in place, it survives. Without that, it would not be able to survive.
So it seems, you brought in a lot there. One of the things that I noted was it almost sounded like tradition. Like it's tradition that is it's the tradition of an ideology that is perpetuated by culture. Culture allows tradition to transcend time or to continue on with time. Is that a fair kind of analysis of what you said?
Indeed.
And one of the other things you said was there was like a universal culture versus the individual culture. And so I was wondering, can you kind of expand on what you mean by universal culture?
Universal culture meaning like a concept of privacy, a concept of making jokes and playing games, the concept of having art, the concept of leadership roles, who can implement community relationships. Those are universal cultural artifacts that everyone around the world has. But once you go But once you set foot on a different continent, and the culture changes. You see what I'm saying? But the universal concept of culture stays in place. But then another set, another group of cultural artifacts comes into the picture. So there's, I believe that there's like a universal concept of culture that is around the world that are, you know, just basic like cultural things that us human beings do because we're human beings. But it gets broken up into other things once you go to a different country or you deal with a certain ethnic group. And then you add on top of that.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think about the universal culture idea? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think Radia brought up some really interesting discussion points when she mentioned things like making jokes or the expectation of privacy, because those are definitely, I think, cultural artifacts. I guess the question I have about it all, and I think this might be getting to one of the fundamentals of Marxism, though I'm not sure, is, you know, Radia, you were talking about the survival of tradition or the perpetuating of this ideology. I guess my question would be, and I don't really have an answer, is which supervenes? You know, is it survival of individual people, survival of the race, or survival of the ideology that sort of supervenes onto the survival of the race? I'm not sure. I don't even know if I can answer that. You know, what's really being perpetuated?
It's not the latter, I don't think, of the race. It's a group of individuals. It's
I think a Marxist would probably agree with you there.
Yeah, it's the perpetuation of a way of thinking. It's not a particular race. I mean, if you look at it from a different perspective, and I don't know if I should mention this individual's name, but like Hitler, for example, that would be a different scenario and different situation. Therefore, the rules will be different. So I would, in that situation, I would say yes, it would be cultural artifacts of perpetuation to keep that certain, the Aryan, you know, race intact. So yes, it would be equated with race. But I think in any other situation, it's the perpetual nature of thought, of a way of thinking, and not particularly a race.
I guess,
or maybe even a class.
Yeah, I was thinking more like Homo sapiens in general. Hitler is a great example, though, and I certainly see us coming back to that. He's interesting for a few reasons. But, I think Radia hit the nail on the head when she talked about sort of the universal cultures within an ideology. That certainly seems to make sense.
Right. So, I mean, what I find really interesting about the universal culture phenomenon is that it says we're all in it, that it's some general kind of human culture that's there, and it can somehow include Hitler and Gandhi, you know, in the same structure, I guess, or the same kind of phenomenon that we see. And it's based on these human things of privacy, and I think privacy is a good one. I think jokes is another good one. Food, you know, all these
love.
Things that are necessary. Love.
Love. Everyone needs to be loved, whether you're a maniac or a sane person. Everyone needs to be loved, baby. So that's kind of,
I agree. So that's just, I don't know, I just find that super interesting. And I know this may be somewhat of an obvious question, but again, you know, a great philosopher once told me that it's good to be careful in your thinking. So I'm just trying to be careful here. And basically, so universal culture then, where does that universal culture come from? I think once you get into the individual cultures, you can go through a whole slew of things. But the universal culture, if it's something that's unique to all humans, where does that universal culture find itself? Because it's not within some sort of social structure, because it exists separate from it. Rather, it's just a part of every human's identity, a part of their makeup. So where does that universal culture find its footing?
That's a good question, but I'm just going to, this came into my mind, so I'm just going to spit it out. The moment you become conscious, meaning, because consciousness means to be aware, once you, And I don't mean like when you first come out of the womb. I mean when you become active and socialized into the social frame. Once you start to understand the concept of emotions and what feels good to you. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
That makes me ask the question, I don't know, do you think I can make the inference then that such as, you know, 3- and 4-year-olds who are just beginning to grasp the world, then are they absent from this universal culture?
Oh, no, totally not, because when something doesn't feel good, they know that it doesn't feel good because they start crying.
Ah, yes, yes.
You see what I'm saying? They know that it doesn't feel good, and they bust out in a cry. But when something is funny and hilarious, oh, my God, they will crack up, and they crack up so hard that they will make you crack up and almost pee on yourself. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I guess basically what I'm saying is that these universal cultural ideas are really inbred software, human software that we come to the planet with, and we begin to discover them. So I shouldn't really say that when you come out of the womb you really don't know, but you do know, because when something doesn't feel good, you weep, the child cries. We all, when a child yearns for love, they get right up under the mother or the father and they want to be held. You know what I mean? So they don't understand it, and it's not advanced, but it's inbred within us from the moment we come out of the womb.
Okay, yeah, I can totally agree with that. I see then, rather than my first kind of thing of what you're, my first inference that I was making up, you're saying I've kind of flipped that on its head, rather that in children who are not immersed in a particular culture, or as you put it, an individual culture, they are actually the ideal form or the way of seeing what the universal culture of humanity is.
Indeed, and it's in its purest form. And why do I say that? Because children are pure beings. They are not mentally indoctrinated with adult concepts of ideology and things of this nature. So basically what I'm saying is they interact with the world from a pure standpoint of reaction upon stimuli. They just react. They're explorers. They have no fear. They don't know anything. And it's like if you were an adult and all of a sudden you woke up on Mars and you were by yourself and you're exploring and you felt safe, that innate feeling of safeness or whatever you felt. But, you know, that childlike feeling. That was a really bad example of what I just gave, but they're just pure, and basically what I'm saying is they're pure in form, and they don't have any, like, mental debacles like adults do, because we, you know, the mind can be a terrorist when it comes to adults, because we're socialized, we're mentally programmed in many, many ways, and children are not that as of yet. They just are, as the Zen would say.
Okay, so I think that we got a pretty good, an interesting distinction, I guess, within culture now. Now we've kind of identified that not only is there a culture of the kind of sort that I think that we came into the assumption about, and by the way, we actually have a caller, and it's been on the line for a while, and I was just about to keep going, but I'm going to take the caller. So here's the caller. Hello, caller?
Hello?
Hello. Thanks for joining us. Would you mind telling us your name and maybe where you're calling from?
Oh, my name is Hope, and I'm calling from Brussels, Belgium.
Wow, excellent. Welcome,
can you guys,
Hope.
Can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear.
Hope?
Yeah.
Hi, Hope.
Hi, Radia. I couldn't resist. So I Skyped in, and I'm talking on a headset, so I don't know if it's, you know, audible or not, but anyway, I couldn't help but resist given the conversation to call in. But do you want to finish what you were saying, Nick, and then?
You know, I was just summarizing, so I don't know. You might have another piece that we need before we start making some summarization of culture. So let's hear what you have to say.
Well, just going back to universal culture, and I have to say that as I was getting everything set up, I was unable to hear like the last 2 minutes. But the last thing I heard was, you know, this discussion about universal culture and an allusion to pleasure when Radia was talking about a baby and children who laugh and things like this. And I just want to say that, you know, one thing to talk about is what in some research circles are called fundamental needs. So that all you guys are talking about love and laughter and things like this. And so the human species, I would say, is built in or has built into it fundamental needs, which you can think of as desires that have a very specific normative force. So, you know, you have your simple desires, but that can be, you know, I can desire to have like a piece of cake or something like this. But a fundamental need is like a desire with a capital D, such that if this desire is not satisfied, then things start to go awry with the human being. And when you're talking, and I'm talking about desire because desire is ultimately linked to pleasure. So when you have a desire and it's satisfied, you feel pleasure. So it's my view, and not just mine, but others as well, that when you're talking about the satisfaction of fundamental needs, like love, you're getting a type of pleasure that is of a higher grade, I would say, than the satisfaction of one's desire to eat a piece of cake. So I just want to say that, you know, going like Radia used this phrase, human software, and I would say, indeed, to use her expression, that, yeah, this human software, I would say, is definitely involves desires and fundamental needs. That's all I'm going to say for now.
And okay. I would have to say to Hope, indeed, sister, you are right. And based upon those fundamental human needs, the human being has created a subculture, a whole culture based upon those fundamental needs that we all need as human beings. Mm. For example, we have created comedy clubs so people can laugh their buns off. People have created culinary arts for fine foods to give us our succulent taste so we can feel good. So we have created a whole culture based upon these basic needs for survival, and without them, we would be doomed, people. We would be doomed.
And I would say, going back to this, you know, culinary example, right, we all have the need to eat. And the thing is, the way that you satisfy that need matters. So, like, if I eat McDonald's all the time, like, I'm satisfying my need for food, but in a way that is not good for my organism. And so, yes, we have created all these different things that are created to satisfy fundamental needs. And I would say some of these things that we have created are more nutritious for the organism than others. So I'll just leave it at that. And I also wanted to contribute to say that it's like really cold and rainy in Brussels as well, and it is the perfect day to be talking philosophy. I mean, it's awful here.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad we're all in that same boat. But to stay off the weather and in the philosophical realm. So these fundamental needs, I guess I have something that I was kind of curious about. So we've been talking about this universal culture, and I don't know if you heard the part that we were kind of saying that, like the simple pleasure or the lower pleasures, but even laughter and love, would you consider that a lower pleasure? Because I think love and laughter are kind of a higher pleasure. I don't know. Is that a distinction that should be made or not?
What's the question?
Because I was, you know, just worrying about how I was trying to phrase this, but I guess, do you think that in the universal culture of what is human, that there are these higher pleasures that can be identified as being universal? And in basically, I think in order to be universal, it has to be within every culture or within every human even.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can you give me an example of a higher pleasure that you think is a universal higher pleasure?
Oh, I think you just gave one. Or, and, you know, feel free and anybody else. I don't want to, you know, just be the only one who's speaking. But I think love is a higher pleasure. But it's not, I would say that even if you're loved, and, you know you're loved, there are still other fundamental needs, given the complexity of what the human being is, that need to be satisfied in order for it to truly flourish. So love is one, you know, vitamin, if you will, that a human needs to take in order to, you know, rock it in a William James sense, as we've been talking about for the past few weeks. So yeah, it's definitely a higher fundamental need, produces a higher pleasure, but it's necessary but not sufficient for flourishing, I would say.
Okay. So we've kind of been talking about this universal culture a lot, and I guess when I walked into this question, what culture is, I was thinking, well, I'm thinking about an individual culture. You know, I'm thinking about, I guess, our differences, and then trying to work in ideology, as Radia hit right on the nail of the head that it seems like ideology is what is being perpetuated by culture. So I guess any kind of general way we can come about an agreed definition for what an individual culture is? Because I think we have a good idea of what a universal culture is.
I think distinction is the key concept there. You know, what makes the American culture different from the Canadian culture, or, you know, even within a country, you know, could even say the Native American culture differing from the Caucasian culture. I don't know if that's a right distinction or not, but I think you get my drift there.
Yeah. Well, I guess I think... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think of culture as, you know, a group's attempt, right? It's like a set of practices, a set of norms, a set of rituals that is a group's attempt to satisfy, at the very least, certain needs. And so, again, you know, like, when we just look at, I think if we stick with the food example, it's useful because you have all these different types of cuisines throughout the world. Religion is something that we haven't touched on either. I would say that there's some sort of fundamental need for some sort of spiritual something another. And the various religions that we get are all expressions of a human being's need to satisfy this. And what a culture is sort of like the set of rituals, practices, norms, what have you, that are there to satisfy these needs. And I'm just going to say that. But I think, yeah, there's different attempts to do so. And I think Mike's point about emphasizing the difference is a cool way to talk about culture. But I would say underlying these differences is this universal nature that's expressing itself differently through these different rituals and so forth.
Right, and I think food is another good example of how these differences kind of come into being. You know, provided I live, you know, in the Amazon jungle, you know, versus like in suburban, you know, Walled Lake, Michigan, you know, there's obviously different things that are available to me to fulfill those fundamental needs. And so I think geography and environment plays a large role in how that is met. Well, we have two callers on the line, so we're going to take the first one that's been waiting patiently, and we'll see what they have to offer. Hello, caller?
Is that me?
Yeah, this is you. You mind telling us your name and maybe where you're from?
I only called so I could hear Hope laugh. That's the only reason I called.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Hope. Hey, Mike.
Hey,
when are you guys going to get away from the equivalent of always talking about how many angels are on a pin, and, you know, and get to real philosophy and how it really can help us on a day-to-day level?
Huh?
I, you know, I hope so. At some point, that's the idea, that we'll get there. We're just, I don't know, my whole thing of this, my mantra's been for today is that to be careful and to take our time identifying the concepts that we're talking about.
Well, if I could, like, defend and respectfully, you know, disagree, Joe, that our conversation is marching under the angels on ahead of a pin banner, which I don't think it is.
Okay.
But, you know, I think it's, like, quite practical to daily life to discuss what, like, you know,
yeah.
A, is a fundamental need, and B, what is the best way to satisfy it.
Well, all right. Well, getting back to your particular point about love, I happen to agree to a certain degree that love is necessary, especially as we're growing up as children. We need that as emotional nourishment. I think after you reach a certain age, perhaps in the teenage years, that I don't think we need love as much. I think love is great, but for me, I want to feel love for a person as opposed to being loved by a person.
Interesting.
I don't know, which love were you talking about? The combination of both, or just the distinction of one versus the other?
Well, that's an interesting question in itself, and I think it goes back to trying to identify what it is we're talking about. With love, it's a pretty broad broad concept. You know, there's the giving or the feeling of love versus the feeling of somebody loving you,
mm-hmm.
and there's the difference between romantic love. The Greeks classified three different kinds of love. Agape, the love of humanity, eros, which is romantic love, and then philia, which I identify as friend or family love. And so I guess when I was thinking about love, I was thinking about it in the very broad sense, and when love is reciprocated. So it's not only loving somebody, but being loved is in that combination is what I was thinking. I don't know if anybody else is on that same page.
Well, to continue on with that, I think that's fulfillment. When you have reciprocal love of somebody you consider your peer as opposed to being loved by your parents, and loving them, I think there's no greater feeling on the planet. I think you are in heaven when you feel love towards somebody and that person that you consider as important, somebody you respect and trust, and they love you back. There's no better feeling. To be loved, I've been loved. And without having loved that person back, it's like a non-feeling. And I've loved or actually been infatuated with or really, really liked some people, and they didn't like me or love me or were infatuated with me to the same degree. And it felt good, except it was unrequited. So I had to get over it. But that feeling in and of itself was cool. But to be loved by somebody that you're not in love with is like, it can almost be an albatross. So the reciprocation to me is great.
And I just want to add also, like, going back to these three different kinds of love and whatnot, that, whatever, going back to certain, you know, circles of research, the fundamental need that they identify, they don't label it as love, but relatedness,
mm-hmm.
so that we need to feel connected, whether it is, like, through some romantic connection or through some friendship, or even through, like, a common work, like, you know, we're both trying to cure cancer, and I feel connected to you because we're both driven by the same goal and so forth. So in at least one theory which posits the existence of fundamental needs, they don't use the word love, but relatedness, and that we, to flourish and to have maximal well-being, we have to feel connected. And I would say, you know, you can feel, and I've felt, you know, profound connections to people who don't even exist through books and so forth. So I would say relatedness can also be achieved through through the dead.
Well, okay, Hope. Well, can I join this discussion with my Ouija board?
As long as they leave a work behind, whether it's a film or a book, something, okay? I mean, the Bible, right? I mean, the Bible is a way for people to that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so.
Not the metaphysical.
No, I'm not talking about, like, spirits or anything like that.
All right.
I mean, like.
So you don't talk to ghosts?
That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that I can go be William James and feel like really moved and
right.
Like seriously, like in the margins I wrote pitter patter in one of the passages. So there you go.
Oh. All right, no.
All right. Well,
all right.
So is there any way that we can bring that together to form something? We were at fundamental rights, higher and lower pleasures, some sort of universal culture, and love was one of those things we identified. Then we determined that, well, at least I agree with Joe in the sense that it seems like love is necessary when you're younger, but perhaps once you get beyond, I don't know, adolescence, and supposing that you're a really strong person, perhaps all that you need is some sort of relatedness. I don't know. Does we agree with that? That perhaps it's relatedness that we're talking about?
I think that's too ubiquitous a term. I think because when Hope was talking about love, I zeroed in on that because that's very specific and very powerful. Yeah, we do need it, again, as we're growing up. Otherwise, we could suffer the marasmus effect, where if you're not getting touched, you're not feeling love, you can actually grow up to be almost a sociopath because your body shuts down.
Right.
But when you're older, I think you've reached, once you've had a certain amount of love, and if your neural system can actually accept this to its fullest limit or near its fullest limit, you don't really need love that much because that, you don't have a void and you don't have a hole in your soul that needs to be filled up. But when love itself, that's when you're feeling it as opposed to feeling some sort of connectedness with somebody. I feel connected with a lot of people. Most of them I don't want to feel connected with. But I feel love very, very frequently. Feeling for somebody and feeling it back, and I think that a lot of people go through life like that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to commit suicide, but the fulfillment that a person feels, a heaven on earth, I don't think there's a substitute for it other than reciprocal love for the right reasons.
I agree to a certain extent. I mean, I think the variables depend on the individual, because I love to be in love. I love love. I love to be loved. So,
me too, Rhea. Right there,
yeah,
right there.
Read that, man. I love loved. I love the elements of love. You know, I love all of it. So it all depends on the individual.
Are you loving your sandwich right now?
Am I loving what?
Your sandwich? Sounds like you have a sandwich.
No,
No,
I'm not.
All right.
I was loved by my parents, and I'm very loved by my husband, and I love that, and I love giving love. So it all depends on the individual individual person, per se.
Right, and I think even regardless of the individual, I think in the end, I mean, at least this is my sentiment, is that one, it's a fundamental need, that it continues on, I guess, forever. I guess I kind of flip-flopped on this, but I'm kind of sticking with, I guess, that you need love. I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, not to throw a wrench into anything, but, you know, since Joe wants to keep real,
yeah.
The movie Castaway, anybody see that one?
Which movie?
Yeah.
Castaway, Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that.
And the little volleyball guy.
Mm.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's real love.
No, you see, my point being, he needs to feel connected to something, okay?
That's right.
It's an expression of his need for relatedness, all right?
Right.
And, like, that is his way of staying whole to the best of his ability, given his impoverished environment.
There you go. You brought in a circumstance. Like, if people are in isolation, they have to feel... there were people around, they have to touch them, they have to talk to them. If we're in a normal society, we probably feel like, myself, I like being in my own skin. I like being home. I like being by myself. I like having the choice of going out when I want to and coming home to nobody because I want to. And if I want somebody over, they can come over. If I want to go over there, I'll go over there. But I like being alone. But if I was in solitary confinement, I absolutely would not want to be alone.
And speaking of that, you know, you're talking to us right now, so you don't really like to be alone. And then
leave it up to Hope.
And V for Vendetta. Okay,
oh,
when she is in her cell and she's getting that little note and it says "I love you," all right? See, that's what I'm talking about. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you, sister. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it up. Yeah, the gender war's on the phone. Okay. Just because I'm on the phone, I'm still alone here in my house. You know?
I know, but see, you're satisfying your relatedness need by calling in and having this conversation with us.
That's true. That's true. But to the degree that you're suggesting. No.
That's what I'm
busted,
saying.
Busted.
What I'm saying is
Joe's spot.
I'm just saying that different people can satisfy in different ways. And what I was saying before is you don't have to like talk about love romantically. You talk about relatedness.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I would say like we're all involved in a common endeavor here, which is the joy of philosophical discussion. And Joe, even though you want to like make it practical.
Oh,
you know, there's some sort of pleasure that you get in exploration for its own sake.
Well, that's true. But people do, once they come to the end of their exploration, sometimes they feel let down, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they feel very gratified with having come to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I don't really know where we are. We have about 13 minutes left. And we're kind of really off the beaten path right now. So I don't know. We have another caller.
I let him in.
All right. Here we go. Hello, caller.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hi.
Yes. How you doing? You mind telling us your name and perhaps where you're calling from?
This is Scott. I am calling from Manistique, Michigan, a small town in the Upper Peninsula. And just to talk about the weather, it has been crappy up here as well. So.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're not really sure where we are right now. We were discussing about love as a fundamental need.
Really?
And I think that the consensus minus Joe is that love is a fundamental need. Or am I wrong about that, Joe?
No, love is actually a need when you're a kid, and it's not so much of a need as you get older. It's a desire,
point
strong
eight.
Desire.
Okay. So need you would identify as something then that you need to survive, like your physical essence needs love to survive versus... So
right.
you would argue then as a child, you would need love to exist, to survive.
Yeah, and like I don't need hope to contradict everything I say. That kind of thing.
Well, Joe, I don't know that I agree with you. I guess there's feral children. I don't know. Somehow this was brought up earlier and it's brought up again, but I forget the name of the child, but you know was raised, basically lived off the land without any sort of human communication. And so that sense of relatedness and that sense of love, I would imagine, were not there unless it were there in the sense of Tom Hanks and Castaway, you know, having some sort of object of love. So perhaps that was there. I don't know. I can't really speculate that.
Nature,
yeah, right.
But you bring up a good point because you were saying need to survive, and I said, yeah, maybe we don't need it to survive, but maybe we needed to survive psychologically. And the feral child you're talking about, was that child raised by wolves or by nothing?
To be honest with you, I'm not well versed in it. I was using it at, I don't know.
I think the girl that you're talking about is in the Ukraine. She's somewhere in Russia. And it's the same story. She was raised by a pack of dogs, actually.
Oh, okay.
So there are many studies that have been done on feral children, but
right.
Going back to what Hope was saying, we all have a fundamental need for relation because we walk around in the world seeking judgment from others, meaning that We always want to impress someone on some shape or another because we are worried about opinion, and that deals with relation as well. Mm-hmm. So it may morph. Love may morph as you get older and things of this nature, but we all do have a fundamental need to be connected to individuals on some way, shape, or form, whether that's getting the approval of them or fitting into a certain identity group within a particular culture. So, you know.
Well, if you're going to define need on a not-so-stringent level, then I'll agree with you. Yeah.
Well, I think maybe to sort of bring this back, this might be the biggest tangent we've ever taken on Ethics Talk.
No,
but
there was a bigger one 2 weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
Oh, there you have it. To sort of bring it back, I think the interesting thing that feral children exemplify is that the only one I can remember was from France. And when they tried to, the doctor that found him tried to sort of reintroduce him to society, he failed miserably. And I think that's an interesting thing because we're talking about these universal fundamental needs, and I think sort of the idea was is that culture somehow fills these needs, or that we construct culture as like an answer to these needs. I don't know if we had a consensus about that, but there seems to be a relationship there. I think the interesting thing is that our experience shows that when this need isn't filled, this need for connectedness, human contact isn't filled, the feral children are totally, you know, oblivious to society. It doesn't make any sense to them. They can't get comfortable with it.
Well, it seems that their identity is not created, because from the talk that we had previously, that the purpose of culture to begin with is, from my perspective, to form identity, to form likeness, shared beliefs with individuals who have maybe the same cultural background as far as religion, as far as political belief, as far as patriotism, as far as knowledge, like we are right here, right now. That's a sort of subculture of identity, forming of identity. So I guess, you know, the feral children had identity, but it was with a different form of identity, the animalistic form of identity, a different type of culture. So,
right.
Yeah, not human culture, but an animal culture. I mean, we are animals as well, but the difference is that we are conscious. We are aware. That makes us different than other animals on the planet. We are able to actually walk and talk and think and analyze.
Yes.
And I would say also that as human beings, we have a different range of pleasures that animals, the range of pleasures that they feel, we feel, which are like eating and sex and hanging out with their friends. I know that I have two dogs and they like to hang out with each other. But we also get pleasure from other activities such as speaking for its own sake and exploration and things like this. So,
is that a rub?
No, I'm just saying, adding to Radia's point, that we're more complex and there's a greater range of pleasures that we can feel. And going back to this like fundamental need, fundamental desire, which is what we were talking about in the beginning, if the fundamental needs are all being fulfilled, you're going to have, you know, a very specific type of pleasurable mix of pleasures going on that I think will help the organism to thrive. And I also just want to go back to Joe. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you about love at all. And in fact, I agree with your point that in the beginning, you need a certain kind of physical contact. This is actually shown through research in what's called attachment theory.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if the parent is not sufficiently engaged with the child, what happens is there's supposed to be this natural exploratory behavior on the part of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And if the child can sense if it's being attended to properly. And these experiments have been done where if the child is not being attended to properly and the mother leaves, the child will, like,
cry and cry and cry and keep waiting for the mother. Whereas if the child has been tended to properly and the mother leaves the child alone, the child may cry for like a minute, but then it goes and explores on its own.
Mm.
So there's this actually exploratory behavior that proper attachment gives rise to, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that that's something that human beings have that makes them unique, but it cannot be actualized if there's not that proper connection. Now,
mm-hmm.
once that exploratory behavior is on, then that need for relatedness can be satisfied, not necessarily through like love, but through some sort of meaningful connection to another.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be through like worship of God or through reading books or what have you. But it does not have to be like romantic love. And just to give it up for Elizabeth Cady Stanton, she wrote a very famous article called The Solitude of Self. And she said, look, ultimately, you know, the place to get to is where, you know, should the love of your life die or leave you, you're able to still go on. And in the end, that's all of our fate. And in the end, we all must, like, be alone with ourselves, and we will all ultimately die alone. It's the ultimate, you know, lonely act, death. And one has to be able to be by oneself. And I would say that's also a fundamental need that human beings have. And if you're not able to do that, you know, you fall apart. When your significant others abandon you or die or what have you. Sorry. But I know Elizabeth Cady Stanton going way back when. Sorry. That's it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just want to say I'm actually broadcasting from my brother's computer, which is doing some weird things right now.
Okay.
Basically like a thousand tabs just opened up. And I don't know what effect that's going to have on Blog Talk Radio, but so far it's doing well, so I'm just going to leave it alone, and we'll see where we end up.
And it's not affecting the phone quality at all. So.
Yeah.
That's good.
This is what happens.
Yeah. I would have done it from my computer, but we're resanding the floors upstairs. I don't know if you've been able to hear the low hum, but it's there.
Oh.
Okay. Now that we've established that, we have about 3 minutes left. I don't know, a lot has been said. And I don't know, is there any way that we can kind of tie this back into, I don't know, the question that I was kind of hoping that we'd get to, which we never ended up getting to, is the idea of, so we're kind of, it seems like we all agree that in some sense we're programmed to have this socialization that happens, that we almost like desire it as a human race. And I was wondering, so in what sense are we autonomous, and in what sense are we just kind of programmed to be something? So where does free will come in versus being an automaton? So I don't know if anybody has any opening thoughts on that. Given that we have 3 minutes left, I know that that's kind of a heavy question.
Ah, the free will topic again.
Yeah, we're back on it. I think we've had an excellent discussion of culture here. You know, a good platform. I think we're probably going to have to pick this up again next week, but I think, you know, there's really a lot of questions left to be asked about how culture supports this thing that Radia so eloquently called ideology, you know, and how ideology perpetuates itself. I think those are the questions we want to get to, and I know there's a good deal of Marxism you wanted to discuss, so I think that might be a question best left for next week.
Yes, thank you, Michael, for saying that, because I completely agree.
I agree also, but I also want to say that I would say that autonomy is something that has to be developed through specific cultural practices that, you know, just because you're born amongst a pack of wolves does not mean you're autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be happy to pick that up next week from Brussels.
All right. Well, I hope that we get our enjoyable callers back in. Radia and Joe, thanks for calling in, as well as Hope from Brussels. It's been a pleasure talking with you guys, and let's continue this next week.
Cool.
That said,
yeah.
And enjoy the beautiful day, or lack thereof.
Take care, people. Bye-bye.
Enchanté.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Hope. Bye, you
Bye-bye.
Guys.